Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Marriott and Sheraton Starwood are now one company, and we'll tell you what it means for members of their frequent guest programs.
One of our favorite travel experts, Ed Perkins, joins us today. Ed is going to make you a smarter traveler in a couple of ways. How to handle missing luggage or getting bumped off a flight when you have a confirmed reservation.
At 3:35, KFBK morning anchor Dan Mitchinson joins us to talk travel to Ireland. He'll share the ups and downs of his experience in the land of the leprechauns.
And finally, at 3:45, we take you on a holiday entertainment journey with our friends with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
In only 56 minutes, we will make you a smarter traveler. Thank you for listening to The Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I'm a traveling man, king of the road.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out on the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome. It's the Travel Guys on KFBK. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. Every Sunday from 3 to 4, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for taking a couple of minutes out of your day. Don't forget you can follow along with just about everything we're going to talk about on the program today at TravelGuysRadio.com. Hey there, Mark. Where will we find Travel Guy number one today?
Well, Travel Guy number one is in San Diego, watching the Giants and the San Diego Padres take on each other with a couple of dozen sports leisure travelers. So we're having a good time.
Do your best to keep a chin up. Maintain your composure there. Try your best to still have a good time. Win or lose.
We had Sunday brunch at the Hotel Del Coronado this morning. So I think somehow we're going to figure out a way to make it all work.
All right. What else is going on in your life that we should know about?
Not a heck of a lot. The Sports Leisure Vacations tour catalog is out and it's been meeting with a great response. Most of our travelers should have one by now or be getting theirs in the mail in the next couple of days. And if you would like to get one, you can go to sportsleisure.com and request one.
All right. At the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we get you up to date on the latest in the travel news. So without further ado, let's bring on Mark with the power of the travel news. Mark, what you got for us today?
Thanks to a small assist there from Mr. Huey Lewis and the news. Speaking of news, Marriott and Starwood now are one company. And if you're not familiar with Starwood, surely you are familiar with Sheraton. Tom, this is right up your alley. Marriott and Sheraton Marriott has completed its acquisition, $13 billion acquisition of Starwood, which makes it the largest hotel company in the world now. There are going to be immediate benefits for members of both brands. Starting as of last Friday, you can link your accounts and take advantage of a slew of benefits, including having your status matched, transferring points and redeeming points with both programs, taking advantage of member rates, the special experiences that Marriott and Starwood offer their members, mobile checkout and check-in, free Wi-Fi, et cetera. So the reason this is important, you're a Marriott Rewards member. Now you're going to go stay in a Sheraton hotel. You're not a member there. Well, you are now, so that now things like Wi-Fi will be complimentary to you. So, Tom, you're a Starwood guy. Mm-hmm. So now you'll be able to parlay that Starwood membership into some benefits at all of the Marriott hotels. So, indeed, that will start immediately. Marriott points are going to transfer to Starwood points at a 3-to-1 ratio. Starwood points, as we've talked about before on this program, are worth more than any other. Starwood is stingier in giving out points, so their points are worth more. So their points are worth three times as much as a Marriott point. So a Starwood point will get you three Marriott points. Or if you're transferring the other way, it will take three Marriott points to get you one Starwood point. And they are saying that it'll probably take they plan to operate these two programs simultaneously apart from each other for 2 years and then eventually bring them together. So for right now, all it really means is that as far as I can see by looking up and down at the three press releases they've sent out, is that there are really nothing but benefits for the folks who are members of these two programs. And if you're not a member of Starwood or Marriott and you're a Hilton or a Hyatt guy, something like that, then this may be something that you're going to want to consider. I'm sure that is at least what Marriott is hoping for.
Now, I think I want to clarify something to all that may be listening when I mentioned that I'm part of the program now. You know, unfortunately, I didn't become a member simply because I took out American Express card with SPG on it. I am a Starwood's timeshare owner, and as a result, you know, that cost me a pretty penny. I'm just praying that that doesn't mean my maintenance fees are going to go up.
Uh-huh. Well, you can take some heart because those companies now are being spun out. Those timeshare companies are being spun out from the parent companies. Marriott and Hilton have already done it. And so I don't think it's going to have too much impact on you. So I think, Tom, most of what you're going to see is what you were hoping for. The benefit of picking up a very large hotel chain with a lot of properties all over the place and combining with Starwood, which was one of the smaller major chains. And so I really do think that number one and number two have joined together. So I can't imagine that this is going to have any downside. Unlike airline mergers and stuff, which tend to mean reduced service, I don't know that this is going to mean any fewer hotels on the planet.
Well, I will, as a member, I would get some newsletters along the way. I will sample all of this, and I'll report back.
Okay, excellent. I'm a Marriott guy. You're a Starwood guy, so we should be able to keep folks very up to date here. This is kind of an alarming piece that I ran across the other day. I've always heard that your boarding pass contains a lot of information, and that leaving your boarding pass around, or worse yet, taking a picture of your boarding pass and posting it to some social media or some internet site or something like that might not be the best idea. And here now comes some confirmation of that from a reporter, from a journalist who has taken the time to take their boarding pass and tell you. This is Steve Hui from iFlyFlat.com. It's an Australian website. And but what he has done here is taken a couple of Delta. He was flying as a code share, as a Delta passenger, and he just explains that here on this boarding pass, if someone had your boarding pass, it has your confirmation on it, they can go online, they can see exactly where you're going, on exactly what flights, when you're leaving your home base, when you're returning. In essence, they could even get on some airlines, they would be able to change your seat assignments with the information on that boarding pass. Not every airline would allow that, but in some cases it would be. So the bottom line here, folks, is that, and we've got a thing on travelguysradio.com, if you want to see all the information that your boarding pass reveals about your trip and where you might be and stuff, you can go to travelguysradio.com. You can see this entire story, a complete with illustrations, and it will explain to you. But for now, just let me say to you, to make you a little bit smarter traveler, is do not take a picture of your boarding pass and post it somewhere where everyone can see it.
Oh, great. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, does that make a little bit of sense?
It does. Now, I'm assuming that this is before you actually use the boarding pass. Now, once the boarding pass has been used, is there any dangers still left there?
Well, I'm going to guess that once you're done, there wouldn't be as much danger, but I would still hesitate to leave a boarding passes and things like that laying around, because when you read this article, you can see that there's a lot of information there, and some of that information might lead somebody to some other information about you. So in terms of identity theft and stuff like that, boarding passes really should go in the shredder or should be torn in little tiny pieces. I wouldn't leave them laying around in the hotel room.
Got it.
Just one thing. And definitely don't take a picture of it and put it on Facebook. If you do, black out the confirmation number and perhaps some of the flight information to make it a little bit tougher for people to know what's going on. The airlines, you don't have to worry about. You know, Tom, when you give them that $25 for it to put your bag under the airplane there, and you're thinking, wow, $25 at a time, how much money could they really be making? Well, in the second quarter, they made $4.6 billion, billion with a B, in fees.
There you go.
In the second quarter. That's not all luggage fees. Some of it is, that's $1.1 million is luggage fees, $755 million in reservation change fees.
Wow.
Yeah. So can you just say cha-ching, cha-ching, and cha-ching?
Yeah, there you go.
Someday, maybe somebody will put a stop to that, but perhaps not anytime soon. All right, here's an interesting story. We knew this was probably coming someday. It's happening internationally first. I'm not surprised, as when you hear Ed Perkins speak to us here in just a few minutes, He'll talk about how when your bag is lost or you're bumped off a flight, whether you're on a domestic or an international flight will make a difference. Well, an Italian lawyer has filed a civil lawsuit against Emirates Airlines following what he describes as an extremely unpleasant flight from Cape Town, South Africa, to Venice, Italy this past summer. He's seeking more than $3,000 after suffering from spillover of a fellow passenger on his flight. He says for 9 hours he had to stand in the aisle, sit on seats reserved for cabin crew when they were free, and in the final phase of his flight, resigned himself to suffer the spillover of the passenger at his side. There were no other empty seats on the plane, so there's nowhere else for him to go. He had an oversized passenger next to him, and this guy is, and we've got a picture of the, he took a selfie of the whole thing, and the other guy is definitely into his seat, no question about it.
Well, there you go, spillover, a new term.
Spillover. So he's going to sue the airline, and he's asking them for $850 as a refund for his ticket and $2,200 in damages. And I think we'll kind of keep an eye on this one, Tom, and see what happens. And that's your travel news for today.
And as Mark alluded, Ed Perkins coming up next to help you make you a smarter traveler. Right here, we are the Travel Guys. Welcome to the Travel Guys. If you want to be a smarter traveler, guess what? You've come to the right place. And I'm Tom, along with Mark Hoffman, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And we have with us one of our favorite guests, nationally recognized reporter, writer, consumer advocate, Ed Perkins. Welcome back to the Travel Guys.
It's always been good to be with you guys.
Last time we saw Ed, I was in Ashland, Tom, and Ed came in all decked out in a three-piece suit. And oh, wait a minute. No, he wasn't in a three-piece suit. He was in short pants, and he was dressed for radio, as we say. Ed, we want to talk to you about a couple of important things today. First issue is you get to the airport, you go down to the luggage carousel, everybody's getting your bag, everybody leaves, and your bag hasn't shown up yet. So now things have changed just a little bit in terms of what the rules are, and airlines are not losing as many bags as they used to. So if you could pick it up from there, what does someone do when their bag doesn't show up?
The first thing you have to remember is that when your bag doesn't show up on that carousel, it really isn't lost, regardless of the terminology. It means it isn't with you, but most of the time the airline already knows exactly where it is. They're getting very good at tracking these things with barcoded tags, and even now some of them are using RFID tags. So even though your bag isn't where it's supposed to be, you can usually figure out almost immediately where it is. What you need to do is, even if you're itching to get someplace, you really have to file that report while you're there at the airport.
Ed, so you file that report, and you're saying pretty much your bag has just misconnected, or it's just not in the same place as you are. What are the odds that your bag is going to show up within the next 24 hours?
The odds are very good that it will show up within the next 24 hours. I don't have any data, but just in terms of what you hear about, the airlines are very good at getting that bag back to you within 24. And most of the time, they will deliver it to your home or your hotel or wherever you happen to be staying the following day. That's the usual pattern. You come in. You get in, say, in the afternoon, you report it, you tell the airline where you're going to be, and next day sometime a truck shows up with your bag.
So what are you entitled to then, Ed, if your bag is delayed? Let's say you get into the airport, you've only got one suitcase, it's not there, you've got a meeting the next morning, you know, you've got no clothing, you've got no toiletries, etc. What happens next?
There is no legally required compensation under those circumstances. All you get is what the airline has agreed to give you. And most of them tell you what they will do in their contracts of carriage. And they're supposed to have a copy of that on premises when you show up at that lost baggage counter. Typically, you will get at a minimum overnight requirements like a toothbrush and toothpaste and razor and that kind of stuff. The airline will say, we have an allowance of, say, $50 a day to go buy stuff you need. And some of them say, buy what you need, save the receipts, and we'll pay you. And they, in my experience, they've been pretty good about things like clean underwear and maybe a clean shirt. Uh-huh. They don't like it much if you go out the next morning and buy an Armani suit.
Yep.
Ed, what if your bag doesn't show up? I mean, what if you go 24 hours in the bag? Do your rights change along the way? I mean, as this bag is not found, at what point are you entitled to some sort of compensation or some further purchasing power?
Well, again, entitled is a funny word here because, as I say, all you're entitled to legally is what the airline says it's going to do. Now, in practice, if your bag isn't with you within 5 days, and that's quite a bit of time,
right,
then you have to file some additional reports. But by that time, the assumption is that there's some chance you'll never get it back.
Yeah, by that time, your vacation is over.
Yeah, well, I think that so what you have to do, basically, is negotiate with the airline, and this is a negotiation. You have to say, look, I've got these business meetings I have to attend to, or I'm going to go golfing and I don't have any golf clubs. Whatever it is, you negotiate with the airline for what they will do.
If you're just joining us, we are the Travel Guys. Our guest is Ed Perkins, nationally recognized reporter, writer, and consumer advocate. Now, Ed, we talked to our friend Chris Elliott, and he believes in negotiating in writing. Versus getting on the phone and talking with someone. What is your thoughts?
Getting on the phone and talking with someone is the way to start. But if you don't get a reasonably good response immediately, then Chris is absolutely right.
Now, Ed, the rules have changed a little bit this year in that if your bag doesn't show up in a certain period of time, you're entitled to a refund of your baggage fee.
To me, 24 hours is ridiculous. Because the hassle factor starts as soon as your bag isn't on your flight.
Yeah, doesn't it seem as though you would be entitled to a refund of your baggage fees if the bag didn't show up with you?
I mean, I agree with that 100%. But the only airline that does anything about it is Alaska, that gives you, I think it's $20 or...
$25, yeah.
$25 and an equivalent amount of frequent flyer miles if they don't get your bag to you within 20 minutes. But that applies to everybody. I mean, not just the people who have mishandled bags.
But I can tell you, Ed, that this based on personal experience, that Alaska has become the best at getting bags to people, at least here in Sacramento, perhaps in part because of that little incentive if they don't get the bags there. So if you're flying Alaska, folks, and your bags don't show up within 20 minutes of when you step off the airplane, why, then you're entitled to a little something back. It's not cash, but it'll go for your next flight. All right, let's move on quickly here, Ed. When someone has a confirmed reservation and they are denied boarding on an airplane, or they get on and the airline people come on and say, you have to get off the plane, we need your seat for somebody else, are you entitled to some real compensation in a situation like that, or are you just at the airline's mercy?
You are entitled to real compensation, provided the reason you were bumped was that the flight was oversold. If the flight is canceled or something like that, of course, nobody else gets on either.
Right.
So there's no automatic compensation. But if you were bumped because the airline oversold the flight, then you are due compensation if the airline can't get you to your destination within an hour some other way. And the compensation increases for a variety of reasons, but I believe the figure now is something like a little over $3,000. And you get to keep your ticket, too. So that's a government rule. So what the airlines do, obviously, is they try to get people to volunteer by offering free flights or whatever, frequent flyer miles or something like that in the future. And that works most of the time. About, near as I've been able to tell from the data, about 9 out of 10 people who are due to be bumped do mm-hmm. it voluntarily in exchange for whatever the airline gives them. But that one person, if they don't want to take what the airline offers them, they have government-mandated recourse. And there's a online booklet called The Flyer's Rights on the DOT website that spells out in detail how all that works out.
And it's your compensation is based on the amount of time that you are going to be delayed, of course, whether it's an international or a domestic flight and some things like that. And, of course, this is what the airlines got in trouble on here just recently, is not having the proper information to give to people when they get into a situation like that where they've been involuntarily bumped. And then the airline is not giving them the proper information. So, therefore, the folks don't know really what their rights are or what they're entitled to. So I suspect that the airlines are probably going to try to do a little bit better job at that. You know, when they're fined in those situations, usually it's like pay half of it. And if you do a better job, we'll forgive the rest or something like that. So
yeah, that's typical.
Yeah, and usually the fines are what the airline CEO could reach into his pocket and take out and give to the FAA or whomever. But anyways, the important point here, Ed, is that if you are involuntarily taken off of an aircraft because they don't have enough seats and you have a confirmed reservation on that aircraft and you showed up at the, you know, you fulfilled your part of the contract, you showed up at the right time and you were there to be on the airplane and board, then you are entitled to some real compensation. And it depends on how big of a delay you are going to encounter as in terms of what you're entitled to.
That's right, and it also depends on whether it's an international or a domestic flight. The only other thing to add to that is that if you're on a flight from Europe or on a European airline, the European rules apply, and they're more strict than the U.S. rules. So European rules, you may be entitled to compensation even if you were bumped for some reason other than overbooking. And I believe the cash levels are higher than they are in the U.S.
Ed, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time today and a couple of things that I really think will make our listeners smarter travelers.
I hope they are, and I hope they travel very well.
Don't forget, visit TravelGuysRadio.com. We got a link to all of Ed's stuff and all the information on this radio program right there. Coming up on the Travel Guys, off to Ireland with Dan Mitchison next here on the Travel Guys on KFBK. Welcome. You found the Travel Guys at KFBK, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And as we promised, again, we have a KFBK celebrity, Dan Mitchison, who's on in the morning with Amy Lewis here on KFBK every weekday. Works very, very hard to bring you the news. And we're going to ask Dan to bring us a little bit of travel info.
Yeah.
So, Dan, congratulations, first of all. Got married recently.
Just got married, and Ireland was the choice for our honeymoon. I have known my wife for 34 years.
Oh,
and,
wow.
We met back in junior high, and we'd always wanted to go to Ireland. And I've traveled around the world. My dad's from England. I've lived over there, but I never went to Ireland. We made a promise that we would never go there without the other. So it took getting married for us to decide, you know what, this is going to be the place we want to spend our honeymoon.
Well, how long and where did you go?
We went to Ireland, and we went for a couple of weeks. And I wanted to go in the fall because I really like going over there in the fall. To that part of the world because of the leaves changing, but because of our situation, we decided in the spring. And actually, it was fantastic. Ireland, if I'm sure you're aware of, it is very wet and very damp and very cold. And over the course of 16 days,
that was a rousing endorsement right off the bat.
But you have to understand that I love that weather. That is why when I go visit family in England, I choose October and November because I like the dark days and I like the rain. It's not something that we get a lot of around here.
And, you know, Dan, people often ask, when is the best time to go someplace? And for some destinations, you know, you don't go to Phoenix in the middle of the summer.
No.
But for places like Ireland, folks say, well, gee, you know, when can you go when it's not so rainy? And it's like, well, that time doesn't really exist.
Yeah, it really is hard. I mean, we were lucky because, one, we went in the shoulder season. We just managed to get that. So we got a pretty decent airfare over there. And then out of the 16 days we were there, there was half a day where it rained. Everybody and everywhere we went across the country said, we have never had weather like this. They couldn't remember it. I came back with a sunburn. You don't come back from Ireland with a sunburn. No.
No.
But it was beautiful. We flew into Dublin. We wanted to stay away from a lot of the big cities. We did spend a day or two in Dublin. We found it to be very touristy. We found it to be full of a lot of bars. There just wasn't. You go to a city and you can feel the essence of a city. We did not feel that with Dublin. So we knew right away we wanted to get out into the countryside. We stayed outside of Dublin at a place called Inniscarry, which is beautiful. It just has, it's a town of maybe 1,500. It's a village. more like it. And it was a great launching point for us to go to several other parts of the country. We wanted to go to the south and the western part of Ireland. And the scenery was just absolutely fantastic.
How did you go about picking and arranging for the places that you were going to stay?
It's interesting. I am the type of traveler that doesn't like to make plans. I go somewhere, I decide this is where I'm going to go, and where I end up, I usually get a hotel or a bed and breakfast, something like that, even if you stay in remote places, and a hostel. My wife likes to have everything down to the T. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I took her advice this time because we were arriving during a holiday period, and a lot of places were booked up. So we decided where we wanted to go. We figured about how many days we wanted to stay in each place. We knew that as long as we canceled about 48 hours in advance from the bed and breakfasts, that we could get our money back. And so we still had that freedom to say, well, maybe we don't want to go there and we want to spend an extra day here.
When we visited with Amy about her trip to Europe, her and Stuart, they talked a lot about locating themselves in a centralized location because they walk everywhere.
Yeah.
What kind of transportation suited you guys, and what did you use?
We rented a car. I made sure I made the rental several months in advance, and I rented it from the airport in Ireland. I got a very, very good deal. The exchange rate is a lot better than it was in Ireland. You have to take out some extra insurance, or you can use your credit card, which I did. They do try to push you on the insurance over there. They really do, as you know, but I didn't take out the extra insurance. It was all covered through the insurance I have here and through my credit card.
Yay for Dan.
And yeah, because I'll tell you, it's one of those things that they just, well, you know this. It's one of those
things.
Know.
We tell our listeners all the time. So that's why I was very happy to hear you talk about the fact that you didn't get suckered into it.
Yeah, no, didn't do that. The one thing that they did sell me in on, and I was able to negotiate the price down, was a GPS. And I'm glad I did. I'd never used a GPS before. I usually use a map, my phone, or I just like to get lost and find my way around asking the locals. But we traveled.
Likes to get lost.
I do. That's the best. You know what? You find the best places when you least expect it, when you get lost. But the GPS was helpful. We drove, I didn't believe this until the end, almost 3,000 miles because we love to drive. I mean, Ireland is not 3,000 miles by the end of that trip, but we love to drive and we love to walk. So we'd drive as far as we could. We'd find a little place to stay and we'd sort of venture from there.
What advice would you give our listeners that might be planning to go to Ireland in regards to things to watch out for and things to make sure that you do?
Be comfortable you're driving on the other side of the road. A lot of people are not comfortable with that. My wife is not comfortable. She didn't. I'm used to that with family in England and having lived in New Zealand. I'm very comfortable with that side of the road. But be very familiar with the road rules if you can, understanding the signs, stopping and asking the car rental people ahead of time if you want to do that. I would wait and get your exchange until you're over there. I mean, if you want to get a few bucks from the bank, you can do that if you're not being dinged with fees. I have a Capital One credit card, which doesn't charge international transaction fees, so I don't have to pay that extra 3%, so I made sure I use that for reservations at hotels. And pack lightly. I'm a carry-on kind of guy. I had to pack a little more than I wanted to this time because my wife said, we need this and this and this. But I often travel with just a carry-on baggage, and what you don't bring with you, you know, you can buy just about anywhere and anything.
Well, you know, and Dan, people, when they go on the road, a lot of folks will say, well, I'm going to Ireland. I brought up bring a sweatshirt and all these things. And then they get over there, and the first thing they buy when they get off the plane is a sweatshirt.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, if you think about it, some of the things that you will buy as souvenirs, as logical souvenirs in places, you can be smarter about packing those. And also, as we constantly tell people, be careful about where you exchange your money, because, as you mentioned, Dan, if you can take it with you, get it from your bank, and you're not charged a service fee, plus having a credit card that doesn't charge international exchange will save you a few percent, and you'd be surprised how much that adds up over the course of a vacation.
It does. It does. And if I, you know, so many people buy travel books before they go to these places, and then they follow the same route that the tourists before them went and the tourists before them. And if I can tell anybody anything, it's just to get off the beaten track, go to the small villages over there. We went to a place called Dingle, which we loved. We've said this is where we would love to retire. It's a small fishing village in the southwestern part of the country down there. The Ring of Kerry is very touristy. I mean, we decided to do it because that was the one thing we said, everybody says the scenery is fantastic. Skellig Michael, which is the island that they filmed the final 90 seconds of the last Star Wars movie on. It is a national reserve. It is booked up months in advance. We didn't, my wife didn't even know it was in Star Wars when she decided she wanted to go there. We tried and tried and tried. We could not get tickets there. The night before, we got a call from somebody that said, hey, we had two cancellations. Can you make it down here? We were staying 2.5 hours away in another village. We said, We'll be there in the morning. And it was one of the most breathtaking things we had ever done. Cost you about 60 euros or maybe $85, $90 to go on there for 3 hours.
Now, was that a place that was popular prior to that last 90 seconds of...
No. The the village, Port McGee, has maybe two pubs, a few bed and breakfasts, and one shop in there. And they have been inundated with Star Wars fans that now book 6 months in advance. They can only allow 150 people on this place a day because it is a national reserve. They're protecting the birds and the species on there. They only have a limited amount of boats, and you have to be lucky enough to get out on there on a day where you can actually cross the ocean, which is about a 40-minute trip, and make it out there. So it's a very hard ticket to get, but if you can, it is absolutely worth it.
Wow, that's something. Mark, did you see the last Star Wars?
I did not. I'm not. Star Wars is not my thing.
Well, go see the last 90 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you just
Google it. It's on there. Skellig Michael, Star Wars.
Yeah, check it out. Boy, what a beautiful place. It's amazing how something that can be featured for such a short period of time at a place on the planet can become a, you know, a tourist attraction so monumental.
Yeah, it really is. And you find that, too, that the people that are there are just so nice. If you stay in a hotel chain, you'll get people that are there to tell you what you want to hear. They'll tell you, okay, this is where you go. But if you meet people in villages and with bed and breakfasts, and to me, I don't bring back souvenirs. I mean, they're nice if I find something I really like. To me, it's about eating. To me, it's about experiencing a place. To me, I go to a place for the food. That's my souvenir that I bring back with me.
That's great. In fact, with that being said, tell us about a couple of your favorite dining experiences.
Well, my wife would say they serve chips or French fries with everything over there. They pretty much do. But I love marmalade and porridge in the morning. I love the fried up breakfasts, which are sausages and bacon and eggs and baked beans and toasts. They will offer you blood pudding, which I always take a pass on, and a big pot of tea. I probably had that 15 out of the 16 days we were there because it's one of my favorite breakfasts at all. And you can find a lot of local homegrown food, too, once you get out of the city, too. They're very big on vegetables and fresh meat, lamb and beef, too, or two stews that were fantastic.
Any final thoughts for our listeners before we let you go?
It's one of those places that might not be on your radar, but once you're there, I think you're going to be captivated by the scenery and more importantly, by the people, because they are truly some of the friendliest people that you will ever meet. If you're standing on a corner for more than 15 or 20 seconds, somebody will come up and ask you, do you need some help? Can I help you? Would you like to come in for a cup of tea? I mean, it really is a wonderful country, and they are really wonderful people.
Dan Mitchetson from the KFBK Morning News, and better yet, now a member of the Sports Leisure Vacations and Travel Guys radio program.
I love the show you guys do, too, and I love hearing you talk about travel because travel is my passion.
That's great,
Dan. Oh, thank you,
Dan.
We appreciate that.
Thank you. It's kind of gotten popular, extra popular over the last 10 years, hasn't it, Mark?
Yes, it absolutely has. The millennials are driving the experiential concept way more than any generation before them, and have really changed the travel industry. And this summer, I would say tourism is booming and alive would be a huge understatement.
Well, my wife doesn't know this, but I'm planning a trip back to New Zealand for us. I'm going to let her know hopefully in the next week if we can confirm that. So I'll be back and talk to you about that if you want to.
As long as she doesn't hear this on the radio first, you're in business.
No. Okay.
Thank you, Dan. Another great story about travel to Ireland. Coming up after the break, Al Petralli joins us, the lead guitarist and musical director for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, right here on The Travel Guys.
You can travel by road, you can fly by plane, you can take a ride on this one and only train. We can travel, you and me, over land and sea. We'll get
the. Welcome, everyone. It's the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, here on KFBK, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And by the tune in the background, it means it's time for my annual visit with one of my buddies, musical director, lead guitar player for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. It's that time again. Hi, Al.
How are you, my friend?
All right, excellent. Can you believe this is the 20th anniversary?
No, I mean, when I think about it, I don't even know where to begin. It's just 20 years, you know, two decades. It's like, you know, a lifetime. watching one thing grow from infancy to adulthood and exceeding all of our expectations. I mean, I remember when we were in the studio recording that first record, you know, with no expectations of anything other than just wanting to make a really good piece of art. I mean, you know, it was, I guess, late 95 when we started really putting it together. And, I mean, all of a sudden, here we are all these years later, and it's grown beyond belief.
Again, my guest is Al Petrelli, musical director, lead guitarist for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Well, Al, this year you're coming to Sacramento a little later than usual, coming in right after Christmas, December the 28th. Normally we have you here in November, but one thing that's extra special this year, you're going to be at the brand new Golden One Center downtown Sacramento. And literally, as we speak, they are putting the final touches on it, with the very first events coming up real soon. So what's it going to be like for you to perform in a brand new facility for the first time?
You know, it's really weird. It's sad a lot of times, you know, when an arena that's become such a part of a community, you know, is no longer there, or we move, you know, because, again, you know, we have such a relationship with not only the community but the people who work in the arena, the building itself. It's a sense of coming home. When we pull into a parking lot, you know, it's like, okay, we're good. I know exactly where we are. I know where to go. I know what to do. It's exciting, you know, and it's an honor to christen a new building. You know, and we're looking forward to, I guess, maybe another 20 years in this room. So who knows?
I hope so. Look, Al, tell the folks a little bit about how things have changed with TSO over the last 20 years.
Oh, my God. I mean, about is the same as how your child changes from infancy to being a toddler to adolescence to adulthood. I mean, in the very beginning, we really didn't know what to expect. We just know that we created something, you know, really magical and beautiful. We watched it evolve not only from, you know, recordings and DVDs and CDs and that sort of thing, where people really enjoy it and, you know, bought the record and, you know, kind of embraced it, to, you know, playing live the first time in 1999 with, you know, one little box truck, a couple fog machines and one bus, to where we are now with, you know, 18 semis and, you know, 10 buses and, I don't know, 60, 70 tons of stuff that we hang from the arena ceiling. It's gone from maybe having, you know, 15 or 20 people and it's employed to hundreds of people. And it's been the most incredible journey ever, and there's no end in sight. I mean, for this to go on to 20 years and then some, and for people to turn around and say, hey, you know what, it's not Christmas until you guys roll through town, or, you know, my family doesn't celebrate the holidays without your music playing in our dining room. That exceeded everything. I mean, that's just such a bonus, and to think that, you know, we're part of something bigger than just being a good rock band.
Yeah, that's how it is with our family. When the you know, TSO concert is generally the kickoff for the season. Christmas isn't Christmas without going out to see you guys. My guest, Al Petrelli, music director, lead guitar player for the West Coast division of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And this year, again, the Ghost of Christmas Eve is going to be their performance this year, the great rock opera based on the group's multi-platinum DVD and long-running PBS fundraiser. Al, for those that haven't had an opportunity to see a TSO live, just give them a kind of a rundown as to what they can expect.
Well, I mean, musically, it's kind of all-encompassing. You know, everything that we perform is basically an underscoring or a soundtrack for Paul O'Neill's stories. So if you have folks in your listening audience that are into, you know, Broadway and theater pieces, well, you've come to the right place, because Paul's, you know, very Frank Capra-esque, or Charles Dickens, if you will, in his writing style. Everything has a happy ending, and Paul always jokes, if it's not a happy ending yet, well, it's not the ending, so keep listening. We'll keep paying attention. And with all that written, there's so many different characters in these stories, and each character would have a different song with a different dynamic. So in one moment, you'll have like a very intimate guitar and vocal duet. The next thing, it'll be one of Mozart's symphonies. You know, Paul and his writing partner, John Oliva, are just incredible writers with an endless amount of material that is constantly coming out. So for classical fans, for rock fans, for R&B fans, jazz fans, everything in between, you know, there's something for everybody there. And the funny thing is, and you know this, we've discussed this a bunch of times, people who are coming there to hear one thing in particular are introduced to other things that they really start to like. And you know, so like younger kids who wouldn't be listening to Mozart or Liszt or Beethoven, you know, are introduced to that. And in our presentation, they really say they enjoy it. And the older audience members who may just enjoy the classics but not be too familiar with more aggressive rock and roll walk away going, you know, that was awesome as well. And everything's wrapped in the most state-of-the-art, over-the-top production ever.
Let's just give the audience just a sample of a couple of different kind of things that they're going to hear. Take a listen. And then we change fields. And then we change again. And then we change again. A lot of variety there, Al, don't you think?
A lot going on, a lot of dynamics, a lot of themes, a lot of different instrumentation. That's one of the things that's great about this band is that, again, with the story being so all over the place, the music has to follow suit.
Al, since you're on the air with the Travel and Entertainment guys, and you travel a lot, where's your favorite places to eat?
Oh, Lord. You know, you kind of put me on the spot here. I mean, again, depending on what I'm in the mood for. I mean, barbecue and Mexican, you know, you got to go to Texas, you know.
Okay.
More eclectic food in Northern California where you guys are. But, you know, when I'm home, it's my favorite place to eat. You know, when my family's together and, you know, all the kids are together. I would say that, you know, wherever I'm most comfortable, that's my favorite place. And Chinese food, the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
Well, look at there. See, I knew I would be able to kind of get you off of the musical track for just a little bit. Looking forward to seeing you come December 28th here. Two shows at the new Golden One Arena, 3:30 and 8 o'clock as always. And for those that don't know this, TSO, for every year that they've been performing, and it's a lot of performances, like 100 concerts in 61 cities. $1 to $2 for every ticket that's sold goes to a charity, and TSO has raised over $13 million in worthy charities throughout North America. And Al, we all thank you and the band and Paul O'Neill and the whole crew for that kind of a contribution.
Well, you're very welcome, and I appreciate you mentioning that. And Paul's been paramount about giving back to the community from day one. I mean, he's the guy in the city, in New York City, since I've known him, to walk around and just stop and help somebody out in need. He's that guy. He's always been that guy. We're going through communities year in and year out. You guys are sharing your homes with us and your holidays with us. The least we could do is everybody together try to make it a better place, try to help out a little bit. There's a lot of people who aren't as fortunate as we are. And Paulie's not talking about changing the world. He's actually trying to do it.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, Al, for spending some time with us. We're going to close with, again, something a little different from TSO. You have a wonderful rest of your summer and into the wintertime, my friend. And we'll look forward to catching up with you in December. All right?
Absolutely, my brother. Thanks so much for the time, and all my best to you and the family and everybody listening.
Thank you. Stay well now. We are the Travel Guys on KFBK.
Elements. Reflected light of a candle in the night, and I gave you a music box.
Well, that wraps up another version of the Travel Guys here on KFBK. I'm completely exhausted.
Be sure to join us next Sunday at 3 o'clock when once again we will have all kinds of wonderful things to make you a smarter traveler.
Have a great week. Stay well. We'll see you then.